Hi there, this is Mike Quinn. You'll know me as Nine Numb in Star Wars, and you're listening to the McSauce Podcast.
Welcome to episode 332 of the McSauce Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Hello!
And Mr. Matt Cassell.
I like the, what is that? Mr., what is that?
It's a prefix?
A prefix. I like the prefix.
I might keep it. It felt really natural. It felt really good with the cadence after Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Now, what is the difference between Mr. and Master?
I think we would have to ask all of the S&M fans out there.
I think we'd have to ask Alfred Pennyworth.
Yeah, I don't know.
Great.
It is Monday night, July 20th, and tonight we are rolling out the Dealer's Choice Wheel, colloquially known as the Dealy Cheely Wheelie. We reached out to McSauce Nation, and McSauce Nation gave back. So thank you to everyone that submitted a topic or a question. We really appreciate it. These are always fun episodes for us. We don't know what we're going to get into from spin to spin. So before we start spinning that big, beautiful wheel, we do housekeeping with Ian Sharpley.
Ian, can I interject for just one second? I want to educate all of us and the fans. Master is a prefix that you apply if you are a male under 18 years old. Once you hit that ripe age of maturity of 18, you then become a Mister.
Who knew? Very strange. How do you know that?
Google.
Interesting.
Another thing that you could Google, McSauce.com. You could put it right into the Google, and it'll take it right there. You can find our strips. You can find this podcast. If you type in McSauce anywhere on the internet, it's only going to take you to our stuff. So check that out anywhere on all the socials, on YouTube. You can message us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and send us over all of your lovely suggestions about how we should run this podcast better. You can also check us out on Patreon. We have a brand spanking new Patreon episode coming up this Wednesday, or you would have already listened to it. It is the third part of the Transformers rewatch. More Than Meets the Eyes, me and Paul watched the first three episodes of the miniseries, and we got really fucking drunk, or at least I did. I got so fucking drunk.
It always makes me so happy, just to the core of my being, when you get visibly drunk. Because normally, I get visibly drunk every other night. But you, like, we'll go beer for beer, shot for shot all night long, but you maintain a modicum of composure. But
not on episode three.
Woo! When you really let loose, man, does it make me happy.
Oh, boy. So if you want to hear me blacking out, check out the Patreon Slapdown $5. And your $5 go to us improving and expanding the podcast, doing some different things. Hopefully, once COVID-19 is all over, maybe we can return to conventions and do live shows and all that fun stuff. And all of your donations go towards that kind of McSauce activity. So thank you, everybody that has donated, and everybody in the future that plans on donating. Thank you.
So why don't we just jump right on in to the wheel? We had to pull the big curtain off of it, wheel it out into the studio, and here it is. It's all primed and ready to go. Matt, are you ready to spin that wheel?
Woo!
Yes. Do we run through the questions?
We normally do, but I don't know. Do you think we shake it up and just kind of spin and it'll be
let's
a surprise for everybody at home?
Let's do that.
So everybody will be anticipating, are they going to pick my question? Is it going to be my question? I don't know.
did my question even make it? Because Paul thought it was dumb. Who knows?
Is it going to be my question? Oh, I didn't send one in. Ah!
Because I'm not a true fan. Oh.
Matt, what the fuck?
Yeah, tighten that guy up top there.
Technical difficulties, everybody. We should have some music and the Jeopardy music, if you will.
I would prefer like old 70s game show music. And that is Ryan. Good old Super Ryan 78.
Big fan. Always happy to see him at some of the live events. He has a fun sports-related question. NHL playoff predictions? Who makes the finals and wins? Or will they even finish before it's shut down again?
So being that we're a Pittsburgh-based show, not to sound homerish, but I think the Penguins have a shot. I think all healthy, all ready to go. You know, they can really make a run. I don't know if they're going to do it. I think it's probably going to be like St. Louis or some boring ass team that winds up winning, because there's nothing really exciting about the Blues, but they are healthy and they were playing really good. Even though, like, I mean, who fucking cares how teams were doing before the break?
Yeah, it feels like it was a lifetime ago. I can't even remember what the Penguins were doing whenever we were last involved in playing.
They were playing really well amidst a bevy of injuries. They were like, it's shocking to me that Mike Sullivan is not up for Coach of the Year with just all the injuries and all the, you know, the roster turnover that he had to deal with during the shortened regular season. Yeah, like I feel like it's going to be just some dumb team that wins, but I'm excited. We're going to get like 8 hours or fuck 8 hours. We're going to get like 24 hours
short playoff
of hockey a day. They're going to start.
So how are they
they're going to run games starting at noon every 2 hours.
Oh my God. Are you ever going to do any work?
It's
going to
be fucking awesome. It's going to be like, so the first round of the NHL playoffs, it might be the same way in the NBA. You normally get like 4 games a day. Like there's always a shit ton of games going on. And like, it's always like, you can always find some hockey game that's on. There's always some interesting game being played. It's playoffs, so the intensity's cranked up. And like, this is going to be like a step beyond that.
So are they going to play part of the regular season? Like, how's that going to work for the NHL? Because the NBA is going to, once they start the play in the bubble down in Orlando, they're going to play a certain set amount of regular season, quote-unquote, games.
The NHL is going to do preseason games.
Okay.
So it's essentially just going to be a handful of, like, maybe 2-3 scrimmages just to kind of, you know, take the step from practice to more of a game situation before they get into the real stuff that's going to matter. But this first round's only going to be best of 5. Mm. I think there's a lot of unwarranted hype on the Blackhawks. I think they're going to get bumped real quick. If the Penguins don't cut through the Canadiens like a buzzsaw, I will be completely shocked. You know, I think the Lightning have just as good a chance. I think the Capitals might win their second cup in 3 years, even though this is an asterisk heavy cup.
Well, it is, but I think this year is, or these playoffs, I feel like there's going to be very little relevance about how things were going up until this point. It feels like it's a brand new season that's strictly just a playoff. It's weird. I honestly feel like anybody has just as good a chance. Actually, I'd like the Penguins' chances in particular, just simply because they have the talent on the team, and it's not so much about momentum or anything at this point. It's who can hit the ground running, and I feel like the Penguins probably like a healthy Penguins team has the best shot out of anybody. I do worry about their goaltending, though. I think it's suspect with both of their goalies, in spite of the fact that Jari was, I think, the number 2 goalie in the East this year up until this point. because I think he dropped his last four games.
He started falling off towards the end.
So,
didn't he represent the Pens in the All-Star game? Is that right?
Yeah.
That feels like a lifetime ago. I remember we're over here watching part of the All-Star game.
It was like the first week in February.
I think so.
Yeah.
It feels so long ago.
I know. It feels forever ago. And like I feel that, you know, one of the reasons the Penguins, you know, I mentioned the Penguins, Capitals, Blues, they're semi-recent cup winners. They have teams and players that have done it before. I think, you know, Calgary, Nashville, you know, even Edmonton, they could hit the ground running a little bit, but they don't have that playoff cachet built into those rosters.
Mm-hmm.
They're decent rosters, but I think really being able to get the team focused in on the job immediately at hand, like teams aren't going to get a chance to play playoff hockey for a month just to get in a playoff spot and then jump into the playoffs to have that kind of run up this season. So I think, you know, the teams that already have built-in playoff experience are going to go a lot farther, and Boston too. I think, like, thinking through it now, I think, like, I would put my money on some team from the East. I think there's just much more overall stronger, more experienced teams in the East. So
we'll see. It'll be interesting. I'm kind of desperate for some sports, so I'll take it. And you know, I kind of liken it to a little bit of a I don't know if I want to call it a freak show kind of season, like the lockout season, where they didn't start until December, so they had this super condensed, compact hockey season, whatever it was, like 10 years ago, something like that at this point. It was a while ago now.
2004.
Was it in 2004?
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
It was the 2004-05 season. The Lightning won in 2004, and that was it.
I think we're all old, buddy.
But what I'm getting at is, like, when you have that kind of condensed kind of structure, and obviously every game matters here since it's going to be a playoff, it makes things more exciting. Like, it's conversely the baseball season coming up. What are they playing, like 65 games or something?
They're gonna play 60 games.
60 games. Every game,
that's what it should be. Every
game. I know, right? Every game matters. I am, like, legit kind of into this. I mean, of course, if the Pirates lose like four games, they're out of it that quickly, but I still think it'll be cool to watch baseball where legitimately, like, every pitch matters, at least as long as the teams are in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm excited by that. I think that's going to be really fucking cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about baseball starting too. I like this idea of the 60 game season. Well, granted, like, you know, baseball normally plays 162 games. That's fucking insane. So it's going to be more like a regular hockey season. Regular hockey season's 82. So there are going to be plenty of baseball games that don't matter. But at the same time, this puts a little bit more onus on the games that they are playing.
How are they doing the fans? Like, I'm not up to date on baseball and how they're going to roll out the season. Are they all playing in one place? Is it spread out between a few different fields? Like, what's going on with that?
I don't follow MLB, the whole league that tight. I don't know what they're doing. As far as I can tell, it's business as usual, but people aren't going to the games. So, but I mean, don't take my word for it. I could be completely wrong about that, but I feel like baseball would maybe have baseball players may argue with me, but I would assume that a baseball game would be least impacted by fans or no fans.
Yeah. And I mean, the Pirates are going to feel right at home because they've been working this
whole
plan
for
20
for this
years.
Since 93.
So they're going to
built for this.
Wouldn't it be something if the Pirates won the World Series?
Of course it'll be this year that they win.
Oh my God, that would be wonderful.
In front of no one. People will be like, did it really even happen?
Yeah, if the Pirates win the World Series and in the
and
middle of the
woods.
Nobody
sees, did it really happen?
Matt, why don't you crank on that wheel again? Ryan, thank you so much for the question.
It's weird how it sped up. Our friend Larry Ganny from the Guest Room podcast asks, favorite game show outside of the Dealey Wheelie Cheely?
Well, this isn't really a game show. There's no stakes.
No? I mean, the people's questions may or may not be answered.
I guess we could work it so that it's a game. It's a contest for the submitters of the questions.
Favorite game show? I'm not a huge game show person, but I'd have to say, hands down, Double Dare is my favorite game show. It was the one that I most often watched and always wanted to play myself.
Yeah, I always wanted to play Double Dare. I watched a lot of Double Dare. Double Dare is probably the game show that I watched the most on my own. I also got roped into a lot of Legends of the Hidden Temple because that was in
that was in
my brother's wheelhouse.
Yeah.
I saw this question come in earlier today and I was like, man, favorite game show. Like, I think like right now it would have to be the Titan Games.
Oh, yeah, I love the Titan.
Like
games.
The Titan Games is so fucking good. Like I didn't expect it to be that good. I was like, oh, the Rock's putting together some, you know, athletic game show. It's going to be like American Ninja Warrior. I've seen American Ninja Warrior. It does not hold my attention at all. Like, I don't care. I don't know what it is. It's similar feats to the Titan Games, but something about it, I just couldn't be less
interested.
Well, there's
more direct competition in the Titan Games. It's one-on-one battle. And, yeah, I really like that show. That's probably my favorite current one as well. I'm a little disappointed in The Rock's selection of his Titans because they seem like they get beat all the time.
Yeah, yeah. If you're unfamiliar with the Titan Games,
Matt,
it's a one-on-one athletic competition show that The Rock specifically devises the contest that the contestants are going through. You know, there's the lunar pool or lunar whatever it is. They have to climb like 30 this ladder like 20 feet into the air, and then they're on this crescent that gets thinner on the end, and you have to run into the middle and push this big heavy door and knock the other person off this like half circle. It's so fucking intense.
It is intense because some people, if you don't get up quick enough, you're just going to get steamrolled by the big block. A lot of the time,
even when someone does steamroll someone, it's still fucking intense.
Once you get to the very edge, a lot of the time you'll see the person that's pushing just run out of gas, and the other person that's almost on the edge can come all the way back and push them off. It's
Lunar Impact is what it's called.
Yeah, yeah.
Listeners, do yourself a favor. Just go look up Titan Games Lunar Impact. It's intense. And like there's a bunch of other stuff on there, but it's always like one-on-one. But this season, The Rock has handpicked some former NFL players, snowboarder Hannah Teeter, a couple MMA or boxing people.
Joe Thomas of the Cleveland Browns was one of the handpicked Titans. And
who
I think
was really good?
I think he won more Titan games than he won NFL games.
He won more Titan games than all of the other Titans combined. Matt, how do you feel about, you know, like stuff like Titan Games, American Ninja Warrior, or even American Gladiators?
Well, I really liked American Gladiators when I was a kid. I even kind of got into the first maybe one or two episodes of it when they brought it back with Muhammad Ali's daughter and Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. I watched that.
But there was just something so 90s about it that worked the first time around that I guess ultimately they couldn't really recapture in the 21st century. So I guess it really didn't work that well. American Ninja Warrior, I think, is kind of entertaining, but I hate the structure of the show because it's loaded with commercials and I just don't have the patience for it. Honestly, it kind of reminds me of football in terms of like the overabundance of commercials, and it just like kills the flow of watching the show. It seems like it would be a much better watch after the fact if you could strip out the commercials. The Titan thing you're talking about, maybe I'll watch it on YouTube.
We went, Matt, you, me, you, and I think Matt Walker went to lunch one day. And we went to the pizza place down in the Waterworks, and it was on. And I think you were like, what the fuck is this?
I thought that sounded kind of familiar.
It's way better than you'd think. Because
okay,
I kind of watched it on accident, and then I got roped, and I was like, oh my God, this is actually really good. And what I really like about it is I think The Rock is very genuine about working out in these feats of strength and skill. And yeah. He is fucking amped. Like, I don't think The Rock is that great an actor to be able to sell how into this he is. So if there's there's like two guys just pulling on, you know, this tug of war or whatever, like he's down on the floor with them, just so amped to be part of this and to be doing this. Like, I think he does Jumanji and that's fun and everything, but I think he loves Titan Games. Like, he loves being a part of this and bringing people in from all different walks of life to compete on his show. And like, his enthusiasm and his energy for it, it juices me up, and I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go.
Paul's it makes on you want to go, yeah. Paul would get murdered on this show. The people.
That's the people episode I would watch.
Paul gets murdered.
Episode. Oh, I don't. So, yeah, I would love to do any of these things, but I don't want to do them against someone else.
The body types that are featured on this show, these people look like real life superheroes. It is crazy. And the fact that so many normal, regular people can defeat NFL stars, Olympic athletes, it's really a testament to their athletic abilities. And
well, I think also people personally train so much harder, like just in their private lives, just to be healthy and just to do it than ever before. And you could get your random dude from Planet Fitness that is insanely in shape and healthy that could probably compete at a super high level.
Like, if you think about the American Gladiators back in the 90s, some of the Titan Game contestants look like American
Gladiators.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, right. Remember what the contestants on American Gladiator look like?
They look like us.
Regular, well... They looked more fit than us, but like they still look like regular fit dudes,
yeah,
or regular fit women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I
chicks, I think they're called.
I definitely recommend looking up some Titan Games clips. Larry, I don't know if
that's not what
sure
he wanted.
This
he
is
wanted,
not what you wanted. You want
that's
us.
Not
you
wanted
us to
he
say,
wanted Jeopardy,
let's make a deal.
Or, yeah.
I never liked the one that we can dip in real quick to some classic game shows. The one that Wayne Brady hosts. In the morning right now, where everyone in the crowd is dressed up.
The Price is Right?
No. Everyone's dressed up in, like, crazy-ass costumes. Is it Let's Make a Deal?
No, that's the Price is Right.
No, it's definitely not the Price is Right, because I know what the Price is Right is. Drew Carey hosts the Price is
Don't
Right.
Don't they dress up in crazy shit there?
I think it's Let's Make a Deal. Feud? No, it's not Family Feud. I think it's Let's Make a Deal, and they specifically, the crowd dresses up in, like, crazy costumes. And Wayne Brady currently hosts.
It is Let's make a deal, but also The Price is Right, people dress up too.
Oh, I haven't seen The Price is Right in a long time. Like, I don't remember people dressing up in The Price is Right. Like, if you look back at, like, early 90s clips from The Price is Right, the audience isn't dressed up. The audience isn't wearing, like, a fried egg costume.
Yeah, you are thinking of Let's Make a Deal.
I don't like Let's Make a Deal. All the goofy-ass contestants in the costumes, I'm not feeling it. I always kind of like The Price is Right. Price is Right always felt real laid back.
What? It's not laid back. It's anything but laid back.
Well, when, you know, Come On Down is pretty intense. But after that...
People have been trampled in Come On Down.
I don't know. Maybe I'm remembering.
Maybe when they shout their prices, like they go down the line.
I don't know.
I think it's $2.
I don't know. I'm not a game show guy. I've never been a game show guy like Double Dare. Like, but the ones that I remember most are, you know, Price is Right and of course Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, the old American classics.
Did you pick one? What?
No, my favorite's the Titan Games. Okay. Matt, what's your favorite?
Jesus Christ. I've sat here and listened to you talking. I'm like, oh, what's my favorite for like 20 minutes?
Did you pick one?
That's what I got. And then, well, did you pick one? Ian, why don't you go while he thinks
I
on
already
this first
went. Already I went first. I said Double Dare, fuck.
Yeah. I would pick that, but you already did, so I'll pick something different. I'll just say Jeopardy.
Wasn't there a Double Dare sequel? Wasn't there like Triple Double Dare?
Son of Double Dare.
Let's spin that wheel. Oh, a little Daniel Doing popping up on the old wheel.
Our good friend Daniel Doing asks, what do you think about the new Ninjak series? Ninjak, a staple of 90s comics, Valiant character, made a resurgence in the past, I don't know, what, 10, 8 years, somewhere around there. And Matt, you've always been a big Ninjak fan. So what are your thoughts, man?
Well, they just announced it today. There's going to be a new Ninjak series. It's going to come out in 2021. It was probably originally going to come out this year, but then, you know, nothing can actually happen this year.
No.
Except
it's
for
been
death and
this year's been canceled.
I wonder if they're going to cancel Christmas
this year.
Please, God, cancel Christmas. Cancel the holiday season.
They're definitely canceling Halloween.
Oh, my God.
Halloween RIP this year.
You mean like the trick-or-treaters?
Yeah.
Okay. That part's fine. We can still watch scary movies, just not Halloween Kills, apparently. The new Ninjak, Ian, do you have the creators up by chance? I have them up over here. I wasn't sure if you had them too.
I do not.
The new Ninjak is going to be written by Jeff Parker and drawn by Javier
Pulido.
Pulido.
I have seen art for this all day today, and it kept popping up, and I was like, some new Nightwing book, and I kept scrolling past it.
Jeff Parker was the guy that wrote Thunderbolts back, I guess, after Kurt Busiek wrote it.
Jeff Parker wrote an amazing Aquaman run.
Didn't he also write a Shazam book or something like that that was well-regarded?
Oh, did he do like Shazam and the Monster Men or something?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, Jeff Parker's a cool writer. I like that guy.
I thought that was Jeff Smith.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe you're right, but Jeff Parker did do a really cool Aquaman run.
Actually, it's Batman and the Monster Men, I believe, and that was Matt Wagner.
I don't know. But there is a Shazam and Monster Society, maybe?
I don't know. Daniel, what are you doing asking us comical questions?
Yeah, Jeff Smith, Shazam, and the Monster Society of Evil. Of Evil.
So, like Valiant Comics does, is they don't have ongoing series, which I find frustrating. I wish they would just, you know, come out with new storylines in ongoing comic books, but they usually only have series that last about 15 issues or so, maybe less. Usually not more than that. Maybe the latest Exo Manowar went more than that, but they tell a story, and then when it's over, they put the book on hiatus for maybe a year, and then they bring it back, and usually it's always well-received, and it seems like it's a formula that works for them. But I think, as a longtime comic guy, I just wish it was an ongoing series. This is going to be the fourth relaunch of Ninjak since Valiant returned in 2011. Like, that's a lot. That's like getting into Marvel territory. I think Marvel's relaunched Spider-Man that many times.
It's almost, It's almost like the way Dark Horse would do Hellboy, but it's not exactly the right way.
Because it's exactly like that.
But Hellboy wouldn't really go on hiatus. They wouldn't put the book on a shelf. They'd do like, here's 6 issues of this, here's 8 issues of this, but it was always consistent. You're getting Hellboy, BPRD, Abe Sapien, you're getting something on.
There was never a Hellboy break?
There were Hellboy breaks, but it's being supplanted by something else in the Hellboy universe. It wasn't consecutive numbering. It wasn't like you weren't getting a Hellboy, 222. But I don't know, like the way you mentioned this, that they do the hiatus, they put it on the shelf for a minute. Like,
yeah,
no,
well,
just keep it going.
Yeah,
just
it's been it's been a minute since that last Ninjak series wrapped. And it was actually really cool. What was neat about it was I felt like, I don't even remember who wrote it, but in the storyline, I want to make the comparison about with Ninjak, the way that Geoff Johns, when he took over Green Lantern, he applied all these different colors to the rings that represented different things, and he really expanded the mythology and kind of standardized it for the way that we see Green Lantern today. Well, forgive me for not knowing who wrote the last series of Ninjak, but in that, they expanded on Ninjak's story or his mythos, and the premise is maybe like in World War I or II era, for the British there were these like ninja elite spies or something, and the first one was like called Ninja A, and then the next one that came along was Ninja B, and so on until you get all the way down to the alphabet, and then the current guy is Ninja K, Ninjak. And they kind of go through the story of like how Ninja A, B, and C kind of all played against each other, and how Ninja A kind of turned, and Ninja B still was working for the state, and it was actually really interesting.
I read the first couple of those and I really liked it, and then for whatever reason I didn't get the next one and then just fell out of it.
Was I lending those to you? Maybe I forgot to bring them. But yeah, it's totally cool stuff. It's definitely worth reading that last Ninjak series. I don't know what the storyline here is. They're just saying like it's going to be a great espionage thriller or something. And frankly, in the art samples that I've seen, it doesn't really do much for me to get me jazzed about it. With that said, I'm coming off of reading G.I. Joe, the Snake Eyes comic by Rob Liefeld, with energetic and action-packed artwork. And then you look at something like this, it looks kind of stiff by comparison. So, I mean, whatever. I'll probably check it out just because I like the character, but I'm not excited about it. Like, there was this countdown on Instagram, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 every day, right? There'd be a new number. And, there's going to be this great Ninjak announcement. It's like, yeah, there's a new series. It's like, well, no shit. There's a new series for every one of your marquee characters once the series ends. It's just a matter of time. And this just seems like another one. And I also feel like every time you bring it back, it comes back a little weaker because it's the same shit. It's like the crap Marvel does. Every time they relaunch a book at number one, your new number one is going to have sales a little bit weaker than the previous one just because people don't give a fuck about that shit anymore.
Matt, I don't think comics are for you.
Yeah, you might want to not read them anymore.
You should probably just shouldn't get this Ninjak book.
I might not. Yeah, well, if there's anything, quarantine definitely taught me I don't miss comics, that's for damn sure.
So you've been completely cut off from comic books? See, like, I still am reading comic books in the same amount. Maybe it's just because I feel like I've transitioned completely to digital comics. So my reading habits haven't changed at all.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, as far as new stuff, there's very, very little new stuff that interests me or excites me. I was interested in the new G.I. Joe thing just because Liefeld was on it, and I read that, and I rather enjoyed it. But it had a lot of old school sensibilities that, you know, I like from back when I really enjoyed comics. So, yeah, there's not a whole lot of what's going on in modern books that appeal to me overall. I have found much more value in other forms of entertainment.
He's moved on, ladies and gentlemen.
Why don't we see...
I don't know about that. I feel like comics have moved on. I still like what I like. Comics are different. They just are.
But that still makes you move on from them. Like, you have moved on at that point because comics have changed.
Like all media does.
Yeah.
Why don't we see if we change from what the next wheel question is going to be?
You mean that, like, was convoluted. Why don't we spin the wheel?
Oh, what a good spin. And our question is Paunch. Good old Paunch from the Case in Point podcast. Ian, what is Paunch's question?
What is your favorite comic book character's favorite sandwich?
Oh,
amazing, man. Question, Paunch.
What a... Yeah, I love this question. But, man, what a difficult question to answer. I've labored over it all day. I've done nothing today but stare between the atoms thinking about what Hal Jordan's favorite sandwich is. And I don't know.
Great answer, Ian. You don't
know. Well, my favorite comic character is Spider-Man, Peter Parker. His favorite sandwich. So it can't be something too sloppy. Like,
I was going to say PB&J for him.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty nice and contained, right? Wouldn't get all over the place.
On the go, yeah.
But he need, and it's got some protein and everything like that. But Peter Parker, he's a New Yorker. Is there a quintessential
pastrami?
Yeah, a quintessential New York sandwich, pastrami.
Is that what he was? What was the sandwich he was talking about in? What was the new Spider-Man movie? Homecoming.
I don't know. I could see Peter Parker liking a meatball sandwich, even though that would, you know, the meatballs might, as he's web slinging around, meatball might be flying through the air, but he could still catch it, throw out a web, catch that meatball, pop it right back in his mouth. I could see some of that. Meatball sandwich. That's what I pick.
There you go.
Matt, I know that. And we share a favorite comic book character. So you take pastrami, I'll take meatball. Paul?
Well, I'll give you a Savage Dragon. Ooh. We'll do Savage Dragon.
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
Let's say Braunschweiger.
Oh, my God.
Gross.
have you ever had a Braunschweiger sandwich?
Yes. Yes, many times, actually.
Really? So it's your favorite?
I used to eat it a lot when I was a kid. I can remember my dad would make those sandwiches for me.
Isn't it? So tell me a little bit. Even I can't get past the name to even
it's disgusting.
Entertain.
I don't think I would ever eat it now. It's kind of like a meaty paste.
Like jam.
It like comes out of a can.
That sucks. How could you ever eat that?
I don't know. I feel like I can, as I'm talking about it, I can taste it right now.
What a potent memory.
I'm not out on anything. Like, I'll try anything once. And I remember I must have had Braunschweiger as a kid, but I kind of want to try it again.
It makes me want to die. Just
I kind of want to try maybe half a bite just to see.
But like, I want to
have half a bite. Like, you put parts of your tongue and teeth on it.
like a regular bite size, half that size.
I don't think it's going to be good. And like, I think it's one of those things where like, it smells bad until you cook it.
See, I can't get past shit like that. And then it becomes edible food. Like fish. Fish smells bad. Don't want to eat it.
So, it's not necessarily a sandwich, but since Coast City is sort of an analog for Los Angeles, where Hal Jordan is from, I think Hal always being on the go, no time frame, popping in and out of places, he's just going to hit taco trucks. I'm sure he's got a little spot where he gets some really good tacos down on the mean streets of downtown LA. Hits those up, or downtown Coast City, hits those up, and he's out. There's some like cool delis, I'm sure. You know, Hal pops into a place like Pink's Hot Dogs, takes some photo ops with the fans, gets a couple hot dogs and rolls. Like, I don't think Hal has a cultured palate. I think he eats garbage like I do. I think that's one of the reasons I like him. He's just
a garbage eater.
He's a crap person.
Let's spin it.
Ferdows is up on the clock. And what is Ferdows' question?
What do you think the world would be like if mutants were a thing? No X-Men yet, just people that can be born with abilities.
I think I'd be really mad if I didn't have one. Well, I guess I wouldn't if this starts now.
Sure, let's start tomorrow. We wake up and the first X-Man is born or discovers their latent mutant abilities. Well, what kind of, I mean, it depends on what kind of abilities and mutation you get, because you could be horribly disfigured or...
Well, if your mutation is just like you have a beak for a face, then I think you're just the freak show. But if you have a beak for a face plus you can start fires with your mind, like, then, you know, you're on government lockdown forever.
Mm.
Like, I don't know. I think, like, now that we're talking about, like, this question, I always think of Stephen King's Firestarter. It's not really a horror book. It's more of, like, this exact question. There's not a wellspring of mutants popping up. It's just one girl that's pyrokinetic. And her dad are constantly on the run. And it's an amazing book. It's such a good fucking book.
Does she have control over her powers, or does she need... She needs a Professor X to rein this shit in.
She does, because I think she's 11 or 12 in the book, so it's still it's still coming along. But like they're constantly on the run. It's like an E.T. thing where, oh, there's something strange that we don't understand. Bring in the hazmat suits. Put it in a bubble. Figure out what makes it tick.
Hit it with a flashlight or a walkie-talkie.
Yeah. So, like, I think all the political trappings that have been built into the X-Men comics over the years, or all the, you know, societal stories, I think those all absolutely happen, and people immediately hate mutants. Those two people from Michigan, those with the AK-47 and the little handgun, fat fucks, like they absolutely hate mutants.
Oh,
or mutants if there's just one so far.
100%, they're definitely gunning them down on the lawn. So here's my question, I think that gives
your people, Ian, some room to breathe for a little bit.
Well, there's never
all of
room.
A sudden you're not the problem anymore.
There's never room to breathe. Here's my question to add on top of this question. So if one of you developed mutant abilities, would you tell us? Would you tell, like, Paul, if it would one day we come down here a Monday night and you're like, hey, look what I can do. I can.
What is the ability? You gotta say what it is.
It's going to be something that we wouldn't notice unless you did it or told us about it.
Well, like, I could fly, and like,
sure,
you wouldn't know that I could fucking fly until I flew.
Yeah, sure. Let's say it's that.
Fly like Superman.
Or whoever. Well, your character of choice.
Superman.
Okay, you can fly like Superman. What would you tell us about it?
I'd really have to test it out a little bit first. I'd have to test out the ability. So I don't think that I would. I'm not sure that I would.
I don't think I would either. I think I'd keep it a secret, right, but use it to do various crimes around the city.
you mean various creeping.
Various creeps.
I was, you know, I'm legitimately sitting here thinking, like, would I try to be a superhero or would I just tell you guys? Like, I wasn't even thinking about doing crimes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing. Of crimes.
I know exactly what I would do with flight. Second floor windows, baby.
Oh, no. It's
It's the Creeper. It's and the DC's stop and desist, sir. We own that name.
It's the Creeper. It's a second floor peeper.
So like the big question is always invisibility or flight. And
is it the big question? I think invisibility.
Well, I think often people put those two together, like either or. But you don't get flight would be really cool, but you don't get the invulnerability with it.
So once you get so high up, you'd freeze to death.
You'd freeze to death. You'd suffocate, or if you just happen to be looking in someone's second story window and they shoot you, you're dead.
Or you're flying and you run face first into a bird, you might be dead. So,
yeah, I think it has the potential to be pretty cool, but I also think it's going to be very limited. All the stuff that you imagine doing from reading comic books with the power of flight also go hand in hand with invulnerability and super strength. Right. So just being able to fly, go watch The Boy Who Could Fly. And then tell me how cool it is, because it's kind of not.
Say you had control over ice, and the first thing you did, I'm going to be Bobby Drake and ice up, and then your guts freeze because it doesn't work that way, and you die. Because
you accidentally freeze your inside, insides.
Or your pyro, but then you catch yourself on fire and die.
Well, I would assume that if you can start fires, then you are impervious to fire.
One would assume. That's why all the mutants currently are dead, because they all died as soon as they tried their powers out.
If I could be Bobby Drake, I'd immediately be a bartender.
Yeah? Yeah. Interesting. Not like an ice sculptor or...
No, because then I feel like you can get away with being a bartender and just chilling people's drinks, throwing some ice in there. But if you're an ice sculptor, you're the focal point of what everyone's looking at, and you can't I could just build out of nowhere a swan, but ice sculptors use chainsaws and shit. So what are you gonna do? Just fake it with the chainsaw with everyone there watching, they're gonna know.
But the chilling of the drinks is the fucking most boring thing that you could have possibly thought of. It's so fucking lame. I can't stand it. It's making my bones.
Where are you going tonight?
Out of my
I'm
body.
Going down to Paul's bar, man.
They have the coldest drinks.
I don't know how those drinks are always ice cold.
Wait a second. Let's bring in the mutant squad. These drinks are way too frosty.
Do you want put in a fucking stupid box all your life? Or do you want to just 10
chill
bar, baby?
That's so stupid.
Spin that wheel. Aiden Mick. Or Mick Aiden, as he's better known on the socials.
In a hypothetical universe where superhumans exist in the real world, how long do you think a Batman Punisher type would last?
Well, neither of those are superhuman.
That's the crux of the question. So
that could happen now.
But I guess, yeah, and I think that what he's saying is, if there were other superhumans that could fight against Batman or Punisher, how quick would they be wiped out? Pretty quick, because in the real world, to your point, all it takes is a SWAT team to descend upon Frank Castle and fucking
Stately
murk
Wayne
him.
Manor.
Yeah. Yeah. All it takes is one drone and Punisher and Batman are dead.
Yeah, I don't think very long at all, Matt.
I think a Punisher would last a lot longer than a Batman in the real world. I think the Punisher would obviously have to have weapons like drones himself, or long range, rifles with super magnifying scopes, where he can hit his target from hundreds of yards away. So that way he could be completely concealed whenever he exacts his justice. If that's the case, I feel like it could probably last a good while. But Batman probably dies first night out.
Probably, yeah.
Well, if his art, his like costume has to be absolutely bulletproof. And like you really have to hope no one shoots you in the fucking mouth. The only not protected part of your fucking costume.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like Batman would get the I'm Bat and then dead.
Yeah, no jaw.
And even if all of the real superheroes let him join the Justice League, even if they're like even if Superman's like, just give him a chance. He's really smart. He's super smart. He's like steps ahead of us, but he's a little crazy. Just give him a chance. Then like the second like he goes up against like Brainiac, he's dead. Like Batman only works in comics or in a world where there's no other superheroes.
Right.
Like
in a Superman, on the other hand, works in the real world.
In Aiden's real world of superheroes. He absolutely does, but okay. A fucking real guy, Batman would be their snapper car. Like he'd be the fucking mascot. He'd be the tech guy. He'd be Oracle back at the Hall of Justice. Yeah. Like, go here,
equally
go here.
Disabled, hey. After that first night.
What was the Punisher's dude in the van? What was that dude's name?
Microchip.
Microchip.
Or is it Micro or Microchip?
Micro, I think.
Micro.
Who looked
Chip's
like
his last name?
Who. Not only had a child molester van, he looked like a child molester.
I mean, he was a child molester.
He was?
I don't know.
Oh. Like, Frank Castle's like, he's a reformed pedophile.
It's his outreach program.
Yeah, I think Punisher lasts a little bit longer than Batman because Punisher works from the shadows. He's just going after
or the sewers
mob bosses.
Of your Dolph Lundgren.
You know, he's not
my
going.
My favorite Punisher.
Yeah, Punisher's not going after the Legion of Doom. He's like, I'm just going to go hit this regular mob house.
Legitimate question. Who is your favorite Punisher out of all the actors that have played him? I think there's been, what, four or five? There's been Dolph Lundgren, mm-hmm. Thomas Jane, Ray Stevenson, and then...
John Berenthal.
John Berenthal, slam dunk.
I really like that whack ass 80s movie. I really did. I watched it a bunch. I had it on VHS. So, Dolph Lundgren.
I'm going with Thomas Jane, but I'm actually going to go with that like fan made YouTube video of it.
I don't think I know that one.
That like really fucking violent, the way it should have been done. It's really good.
You like a nice Punisher where they grab him by the ankles and dunk his hair in black paint?
Well, that part isn't the best. Remember do you guys remember the promotional picture for that Punisher when they first announced it? And they're like, Thomas Jane, it's like the fucking guy from Deep Blue Sea is going to play Punisher. And everybody's like, what are you talking about? That guy has blonde hair. In the promotional picture, Thomas Jane is still rocking his blonde hair with his Punisher outfit, and everybody's like, what is happening? And then obviously they dyed his hair for the movie. And yeah, it was dyed, but it looked better than blonde.
Yeah, it's pretty blonde. You could kind of say maybe that the light is hitting it in a funky way, but it's definitely not black.
It's a really, like when everybody saw that, everybody's like, oh, this is going to be a disaster.
And they were right.
I don't know, man. I kind of like it.
I like that movie. I thought that movie was okay. I never saw the Ray Stevenson one, but I like Ray Stevenson.
The Ray Stevenson one was decent.
That's
Lundgren,
the real Punisher, baby.
Another fucking blonde guy with shoe polish in his hair.
That's
like,
what I like.
The fuck?
That's what happens when you...
Are there no more brunettes?
That's what happens when you fight crime in the sewers. 80s, big time, peak time for sewer justice. Turtles? Punisher?
Yeah, true.
Is that it?
That's about it.
Matt, why don't you give us a wheel spin? And we've got Cameron Miller, a friend of the show, Patreon subscriber Cameron Miller. And Cameron asks, what do we think are the overrated, underrated, or favorite, least favorite scenes from the original Star Wars trilogy? I was trying to think about overrated scenes today, and I'm just so in love with the originals that I don't know if there is.
Everything is properly rated.
I got one. I think Lapti Nek is overrated.
Oh, I think Lapti Nek is underrated. That's so
good. I think
good.
George Lucas would agree with you, Matt.
Yeah. I'm not saying the replacement for it was the right answer, but it is... Like, okay, if you think about all of the, what is it called, diegetic music that is all throughout Star Wars, it feels very otherworldly, it feels very alien, except for Lapti Nek, and then obviously the special editions.
The Cantina song sounds otherworldly to you?
To a degree, yeah. I mean, yeah. There are other world elements.
When you listen to Lapti Nek by itself, it is straight up disco.
It's disco, and it's 80s, and it's it even has, like, if you listen to it by itself, it's got, like, the singing is very,
I love
very,
it. I
very
think
80s.
It's so fucking cool. But yeah, it's absolutely of its time. But it beats fucking Jedi Rocks, because at least Lapti Nek.
I'm not
still,
talking about
I
Jedi
know,
Rocks.
I know, but at least Lapti Nek still tries to sound alien and different and weird. But Jedi Rocks is just like, that could be in fucking Shrek. That may as well be a cover by fucking the Shrek band. No, who sings the, who did that Monkees cover? Who did I'm a Believer? Smash Mouth. Yeah. It may as well be a fucking Smash Mouth song in that Jedi special edition. Yeah, I think Lapti Nek is very underrated. I think when I started
everybody
this...
Everybody rates it highly.
I think when I started this segment, I meant to say I couldn't think of anything overrated because I couldn't think of anything
that
bad.
That is what you said.
Right, I didn't mean that. I meant underrated. Like, I don't think... Like, the original trilogy is so good, you can't overrate anything. It's all so good.
Well, there's probably, like, smaller details that maybe get overlooked.
That are overrated? That you're just...
Underrated, underappreciated.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, for sure.
Right.
But can you overrate anything? Like, is any part of the original trilogy you're like, ugh.
Yeah, I just said Lapti Nek.
That's ridiculous. Lapti Nek is so fucking good. Ian, what do you think? Not necessarily about Lapti Nek, just...
Yeah, I'm thinking. I really can't think of anything that I'm sick of with the original trilogy, honestly. The way that it was constructed originally. Yeah, nothing. Perfect movies.
The lightsaber fight between Darth Vader and Obi-Wan.
Properly rated. Everybody's like,
everyone,
eh,
yeah,
it's
right.
You know, yeah. It sucks. It sucks so bad that we're going to, like, people have taken it upon themselves to make it better. So, yeah, properly rated. I don't know. Luke's excitement whenever he's able to shoot down that first TIE fighter. I mean, calm down, kid. You know, there are a bunch
that's
of others.
Overrated.
That's overrated. Even Han Solo.
Han tells me, quit being overrated, kid.
Yeah, that's right. Overrated.
Yeah, like, I was thinking about it today, and I don't know. I think nothing from the original trilogy, but I think a lot of like fan theories that try to tie sequel stuff and prequel stuff into things that happened in the OT, I think that's overrated. I think a lot of that stuff's stupid.
Obi-Wan explaining to Luke that those blasts are too precise. Like, yeah, they're not precise. Calm down. Those guys are blind.
That was the last time they were precise.
He was still thinking of them as the clones and not the...
He didn't run into these jobbers that were just like, it's just a paycheck.
He didn't run into Big Boss Man before he was Big Boss Man. Matt, you want to give us another spin?
What was the other part of the question?
That was it. Overrated, underrated.
Favorite,
favorite and least favorite moments.
Oh. Was that part of that was part of the question, right?
Yeah. I think my and Annie Ian's favorite is the intro to Return of the Jedi. Like when Luke's on the skiff and R2 shoots him his lightsaber. There's no better moment in cinema for me. Like,
it's hard to argue with that. That's definitely up there for me. But mine is probably in Empire Strikes Back when Luke is about to face off against Vader, against that, like, foggy background in the carbon freezing chamber.
Yeah,
and all those colors, just the silhouettes of those two.
And I even like whenever they are in the lower level or whatever, and Vader starts using a different tactic to fight Luke, and he just kind of stands there and starts throwing stuff with his mind.
Right. At that point, he's like, pushing. All right, enough of this.
He's like, I'm a little out of breath. I'm going to just throw some stuff at
right.
you.
Like Luke realized at that moment, he's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, because Luke at that point was, you know,
I don't even kind of think...
showing off a little bit.
Yeah.
He was holding his own, and Vader's like, oh, there's a whole nother level to this shit.
Yeah, like,
son,
I don't
no pun
think
intended.
Vader's backing off because he's tired at that point.
No, I think he's like, fuck this, I've had enough.
Let's wrap this up.
He's like, oh, you think that you're hot shit. Let me show you the power.
That moment when in the second part of their duel, when Vader first shows up and the camera's behind him and you just see that hulking figure of Vader walking toward little Luke, it's like fucking scary the way the music kicks in and everything. I mean, I know everybody likes it, but I feel like there's details that are somewhat overlooked, like, 'cause you're into the greater whole of it. It's just such a cool fucking moment, specifically.
Yeah, and like least favorite, I don't any of the special editions. But if we're counting, if we're just talking,
just go OT, just go on
OG,
the one
OG OT. Then like my least favorite would still be like one of my favorite things, and I don't even know.
Maybe like Leia French kissing Luke, like maybe.
I like all that stuff. I feel like it's probably the Endor battle and parts of the Endor battle in Jedi, because I want to get back to Luke and Vader and the Emperor. And it's not because I'm not into what's happening on the ground. It's because I'm so into what's happening in the Emperor's throne room.
We got time for one more.
Oh, speaking of Star Wars, Bobby Lynn.
Or as we affectionately are calling him now, Bob Lynn. Thoughts and opinions about the announced Tom King Rorschach 12-issue series. So, I think over the weekend they announced that Rorschach character from The Watchmen is going to get the Tom King treatment. I know here at the McSauce podcast, we don't really love Tom King all that much. I liked his take on Vision. I thought that was kind of cool, but everything else that I've read from Tom King, varying degrees of good to bad.
I read the first three issues of Strange Adventures.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. It's kind of not a superhero story, because that's not really what Tom King does, which is fine, but it's been pretty cool. Ultimately, I think his Batman run was garbage.
Miracle Man actually was good. Now that I think about it, Miracle Man, I believe it was a 6-issue miniseries.
Mr. Miracle?
Mr. Miracle, not Miracle Man. Mr. Miracle was really good. I like that.
Yeah, I think about Rorschach and like his inner monologue and how a lot of what I didn't like about Tom King's Batman run was all of the inner monologuing and all the like overdub, all the voiceovers that were happening throughout the entire book. And like, it all just felt like an excuse for Tom King to be like, look how smart I am. Like, it was constant. It was all these like literary references and all these quotes from all these like high class literary books. And
I'm
like,
fancy books.
And I'm like, I get it, Tom King. You're smart. You've read a lot. You can interject all of this subject matter into this book.
It's not a fun read.
It isn't. And I feel like Rorschach will give him an excuse to do more of that.
Is that what this is again? I've already forgotten because I don't care.
A Rorschach book, yes. Maybe I should have looked it up. Is it the Rorschach or is it Black Rorschach from Doomsday Clock? Are they spilling out of Doomsday Clock now? Is that the continuity that we're going in?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Because the guy from Doomsday Clock seemed to have his shit a little bit more together than Martin Kovacs. So, I don't know. Either way, I'm not a Watchmen guy. I don't like the original Watchmen. I watched the first episode of Damon Lindelof's HBO series and I was bored. So, I'm not going to get this. I thought Doomsday Clock from my beloved Geoff Johns was a fucking slog to get through. So, what do I think about Tom King writing Rorschach? It's like two of my least favorite things that are going to taste terrible together.
See, I do really like Watchmen. I loved the HBO series. I think it successfully picked up from the point that we were dropped off in the comic books and really carried along those themes in a natural and really thoughtful way. It looks like this is going to pick up 35 years after the world learned about the alien telepathic squid that killed millions. Mm. So it's going to be... but that Rorschach, spoilers, is dead. So I don't really... I would imagine that it might be the...
New Shack,
yeah.
Are you going to get it? Are you going to at least take a flyer on it? Try issue one?
Yeah, I'll probably check it out.
Yeah, I will wait for Ian's issue one review. Matt, what do you think?
No.
That'll do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Matt Cassell.
And we will see you next time.